We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. In the first hour of the program today, our guest is actor and musician Ronnie Cox. He's a man who's had a long career on the screen, the big and the small. He's had roles in over 125 films and television shows. And while his name might not be familiar to you, certainly his face will be. He was in the film Deliverance, which was his first. He's also performed in his films Bound for Glory, that was his second, which was about the life of Woody Guthrie, The Onion Field, Taps, Beverly Hills Cop, RoboCop, Total Recall. He's also performed on a lot of television shows, including the series Saint Elsewhere and Star Trek Next Generation. He also is a musician, and that's something that he really says music is something that he says is really his first love, and he's been playing for an awful lot of his life. And he's going to be here at WILL next month on November 7th for a special event. He's going to be playing a show here for folks who would like to support this station. It's being put together by our staff and also by Rich Warren, the host of the Midnight Special. They'll be talking about that tomorrow on the show, tomorrow afternoon at 2 here on WILL AM. And a little bit later here, I'll tell you about how you can get tickets to see and hear Ronnie Cox when he is here on November 7th. But we'll also spend a little time talking with him about music, about acting. And, of course, if there are questions people who are listening would like to call in, well, you can do that too. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. There's also email will-talk@illinois.edu if you'd like to do it that way. Any way you want, if you want to call in, say hello to Ronnie Cox, you can do that. Ronnie Cox, hello.
Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm terrific, actually.
Good. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it. And we appreciate you spending some time talking with us today.
I'm delighted.
You have been playing music for a long time. When was the first time someone put a guitar in your hands?
I started playing when I was about 15 years old. My dad played for. I grew up in New Mexico, and my dad played for dances. I was calling square dances when I was 10 years old, and so then I started playing music. I had a rock and roll band when I was in high school, Ron's Rockouts.
What kind of music did Ron's Rockouts play?
Well, in those days, we played rock and roll, but in New Mexico, where I was, they sort of couldn't tell the difference between the rock and roll and blues, so we played a fair bit of blues because I just found the blues tunes to be a little more interesting. But I grew up playing Texas swing, Western swing, and actually all kinds of music. I've never been able to hone in on one kind of music that I liked. And when I was in college playing this rock and roll, that was sort of when that first folk music scare came along. You know, there's always a danger of folk music breaking out again. That was the Kingston Trio and the Limelighters and the Weavers and all of those people. And so then I started playing folk, and I discovered the child ballads, which are the English and Irish ballads from England and Ireland. And at one time knew 300 or 400 of those songs. And so while I was struggling as an actor, I was also struggling as a musician as well.
That's kind of a toss-up. Which of those two things is tougher way to make a living?
Yeah, they're both impossible. And the thing is, I actually got my first film, Deliverance, because I could play. I mean, it was instrumental, pun intended, that I could play, that I got that role.
Here, maybe I should remind folks it may have been a while since they've seen Deliverance, but they will remember the scene early in the film, the guitar-banjo duet. The guy playing the guitar, that was you.
Exactly. Yeah, that was not only my first film, that was essentially my first time in front of a camera. And I don't know if you know this, David, but as we speak, it was 40 years ago, 40 years ago that we were shooting that film. Next year, 2012 is the 40th anniversary of the release.
That's incredible. I did read that, and it was funny because just this morning I was looking at that little piece that I just wanted to see that again. You can see it on YouTube, and my first reaction was, y'all look so young, but it was 40 years ago.
Exactly. Well, maybe a little self-promotion here. Because it is the 40th anniversary, I've just completed a book on the making of Deliverance that's scheduled to come out next year. I mean, we've just completed the editing of the book, and it's going to the publishers next week. And it's because of all the films I've ever done, more people want to talk about that film than any other, and partly because it's become such an iconic film through the years.
Yeah.
And I talked to James Dickey's attorney several years ago, and Deliverance has now become the second or third most mentioned film in the history of film. I don't know how it's become, because at first everybody just thought it was just this action adventure film, but there are so many. It's now it's become such an iconic film because there's such an artistic side to it as well.
Yeah, and well, it's just I can't imagine anybody seeing that film and not have that make a deep impression on them. For so many reasons, but particularly the basic story that it tells.
I agree, and I think what it did by today's standards, it has very little overt violence.
Mm-hmm.
Although it is still a terribly harrowing film to watch.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And I think one of the reasons for that is it first of all put men in a position that women have had to deal with for years, and all of a sudden a whole segment of our male population were made aware of the violence of certain things.
The one thing I want to ask you this question, because I just wanted to be sure that as you watch the movie, you see that scene with you and the boy, you playing the guitar and he playing the banjo. Are we actually hearing you play?
Well, yes and no. I'll explain that. I was hired for the film because I play, and John Boorman always intended me to play because, first of all, he didn't care. I mean, I'm not a great picker. I'm not a great bluegrass picker. But John Boorman didn't really care. I mean, he sort of liked the idea that the kid was going to be a way better player than I was, and that this city guy was being shown up by this remarkable savant that was playing the other character. But when we got to Georgia and we found Billy Joe Redden, who's that wonderful kid, he could not play the banjo. He didn't even really know anything about the banjo, so we were going to have to pre-record the song, and then as you know, David, then we were going to have to match the playback. So in other words, we were going to have to pre-record it, and then we were going to have to fake playing it when we were actually doing it on film, because since he wasn't playing. And so when it came time to record the song, John Boorman asked me to go into Atlanta and record the song, and you got to realize none of us thought about it becoming a hit song. We just didn't, and so it would have meant for me that I would have to miss a day of canoe practice and a day of rehearsal, and I was going to have to match the playback anyway. So I begged John. I said, get somebody else to record it, and I'll match the playback, and I'll match it note for note. So if I make a mistake, So they got someone else to do it, and then I matched the playback. So did I play it? Yes. Did I play exactly the notes? Yes. Is that actually me on the soundtrack? No. And that probably cost me about $1 million.
Well, a million here, a million there.
Yeah.
It's only money.
But if you'd known how poor I was in those days.
Oh, I'm sure. Ronnie Cox is our guest. He's an actor and musician. He's been in many films. His very first was Deliverance. He also, since he was a teenager, has been making music and playing music. He's recorded a number of CDs. His newest is Ronnie Cox, Songs with Repercussions. And we will play some music from this, so you will have an opportunity to hear him. And I do want to mention again that for folks who are sort of in and around Champaign-Urbana, East Central Illinois, you will have an opportunity to actually see him and hear him perform. He'll be doing a special event. This is a fundraising event for WILL on Monday, November 7th. Here at our studios, in our Studio X. And this is in support of all of our programming, but particularly the Midnight Special, because this is being put together by Rich Warren and also by our staff here at WILL. And if you would like to make a contribution to the station of $60, for that, we will send you a ticket to this event. There's also a dessert included, provided by the folks at fine folks at Strawberry Fields. So one ticket, $60. If you'd like to have a pair, you have somebody you'd like to take out, and it should be a fun evening. For $120, you have two tickets. And right now, the phone lines are open. Now, they'll be talking about this a lot tomorrow on the Midnight Special, tomorrow afternoon at 2, here on WILL AM. But if you'd like to call in right now, get in early, because it is limited. There are only so many tickets we have. You can call right now, 217-244-9455, and you can make that pledge. So again, $60, one ticket, $120, and if you felt like contributing a little bit more, we also toss in a CD of songs with repercussions. So maybe you might want to do that. And I think it's going to be a nice event. And you'll support WILL at the same time. And we're also talking here about Ronnie's career in music and in acting. And questions there, welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, you talked about the fact that your dad played guitar and that you started playing guitar when you were a teenager. It sounds like in the place that you grew up there was an awful lot of music going on all the time.
Well, it was. See, I grew up in New Mexico in a little tiny town called Portales. But most people don't realize this, but 19 miles north of where I grew up was Clovis, New Mexico. And in the late 50s and early 60s, Clovis, New Mexico was a hotbed of recording. I was actually around when Buddy Holly cut Peggy Sue. It was cut at that studio.
And you were actually there when he did that?
I was. I didn't realize that this was who he was or anything. And also, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, the Fireballs cut there. Sugar Shack was cut there. There was a country artist named Charlie Phillips who had a song called Sugar Time. Sugar in the morning, sugar in the evening.
Oh, sure.
That was cut there. So there were... So I was cutting records when I was in high school. I was in a singing group in high school, and Norman Petty, the head of the studio there, heard us sing at an assembly and hired us to sing backup on records. So I was making records when I was in high school. That was one of those old studios where they had one master knob. We all stood around one microphone.
Oh, yeah, huh?
It was pretty primitive. And I don't know if you know this or not, but Norman Petty Studios is now sort of considered a national monument there, but it was in danger of being torn down. The parking lot was weed infested, and they were going to tear the studio down, and it was saved by the Beatles. Because the Beatles, they took their name, the Beatles, from the crickets because they loved that, the crickets, the Buddy Holly so much. Mm-hmm. And when they heard that studio was in dire straits, they appealed to the city fathers of Clovis. And so that studio has actually been preserved because of the Beatles.
I know you said that you were... have played different kinds of music. You were interested in different kinds of music, and having listened to songs with repercussions, I could see it. To me, I guess the thing that comes through is a kind of a Texas swing sensibility, I think. But you also talked about how you got at the time when a lot of people did I guess it would have been in the 60s. You were kind of bitten by the folk bug, the folk music bug. What about that particular kind of music do you find so appealing?
Well, the thing I find about the folk music is that it's music to me that speaks directly to the heart. There's some music, and I used to play in rock and roll and things like that, and sometimes when you're hearing that kind of music, it's just being in the vibe. You can just sort of just be there. But with folk music, then lyric content becomes much more important, melodic content, and listening, mm-hmm. as opposed to just being in the vibe. And that's one of the things that appeals to me the most about that, because I'm also a storyteller. So I won't play places where people aren't listening. I say it as a joke, but it's true. I'm too rich and too arrogant to play for people that don't listen. So and that's the aspect of folk that appeals to me. Everybody's always arguing or trying to come up with an acceptable definition of what folk music is. And Roz Larman, who has a radio program in California, came up with a definition that really appeals to me. She said that if I like it, it's folk. And that works for me.
Yeah, well, I do. I think you put your finger on something important where you talk about how these songs, they're really about telling stories.
Yeah.
And that a lot of other music really does. And I, you know, I grew up on listening to rock, and still I'm happy to hear bands that I listened to when I was a teenager that are some of them just about making big noise. And there's nothing wrong with that. That can be a great thing. But if you're looking for songs that are actually have something to say, or at least an engaging story to tell, I think that's when you have to go to the kind of traditions that we're talking about here.
I think you're absolutely right. I heard someone once say that the reason all of us got into this sort of folk music is it's the opportunity to share music. It's like playing music when you were a kid, sitting around in the living room or on the porch or in the kitchen and sharing music with your family and friends. And it's sharing music. There's a possibility with this kind of music, with a possibility of a profound one-on-one sharing that can take place. As opposed to sort of a group thing. I mean, it's a group thing that can be sort of almost shared individually as well. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, you know, I'd like to give people an opportunity to hear some of your music. I have a copy of the new CD, Songs with Repercussions, and I thought we'd be able to play maybe one or two things. And there are a couple of songs here that you co-wrote, so I thought at some point I might want to play one of those. But I really would like to play Water is Wide, just because it's such a pretty song. I think you'd do a nice version of it. I don't know if there's anything you would want to say before.
Yeah, actually it is. One of the reasons I chose that, you know, I lost my wife 4.5 years ago, and just so, Mary and I were either engaged, married, going together, or known each other since she was 11 and I was 14. I've never had another date or another girlfriend in my life. And when I lost her 4.5 years ago, it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. And The Water is Wide was her favorite song. And so that's the reason I chose it. The songs with repercussions, some of the repercussions is dealing with the loss of Mary.
All right. Well, let's hear Ronnie Cox from his CD, Songs with Repercussions, Water is Wide.
The water is wide, I can't cross o'er, and neither have I wings to fly. Give me a boat that can carry two, and both shall row. My love and I, Oh, love is gentle, and love is kind. The sweetest flower, when first it's new, but love grows old and waxes cold, then fades away like morning dew.
That's Ronnie Cox from his CD, Songs with Repercussions. That's really beautiful. You know, I don't know how many times I've heard that song, and I've heard it performed by a lot of different people. It moves me every time.
Yeah, it's a great song, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. And I don't know how you could sing it without getting all choked up.
I tell you the truth, I can't. I was sitting here tearing up a little bit listening just now. I mean, that's another thing that I love about the music is, and maybe I'm revealing too much here, but music has allowed me to grieve publicly. I don't know how I could have dealt with the loss of Mary. When I do my song, my shows, I never make a secret of the fact that audiences, that's part of the sharing I was talking about. Audiences mm-hmm. get that, And I found that rather than trying to hide our emotions, if we share them, it's just better. And so it's allowed me a chance to to do that. I don't even know how to. I'm inarticulate about how to explain it.
I was curious. You know, you talked about how you've been really playing music since you were a teenager, singing and playing guitar, and you had done recordings, things that had been recorded. But you're as Ronnie Cox, sort of in this current incarnation, this song, this sound. Your first CD, your first record was in 1993. That seems like kind of a long time to go before you cut your first CD.
Yeah, well. When Deliverance came along, then all of a sudden my acting career took off, and for a lot of years I was playing music at home. I can tell you kind of how I got back into the music. My young son John, who was a fabulous musician and actually used to be the leader of my band. And produced my first album after the 1993, my first one that I did on my own. And as long as I had John at home to play music with, I had an outlet for my music. But children grow up and leave home, as you know. And so when John left for college, you hear about mothers who suffer from the empty nest syndrome, and I'm not saying that Mary didn't suffer from the empty nest syndrome, but I don't think she suffered as much as I did. When John left home, I was lost. I didn't have anyone to play music with anymore, and then I realized how much I needed to find that again. And so then I didn't know where the folk music community was, so I went to Nashville and got a record deal with Mercury Records there. I'm not really a country artist. They didn't think I was. I didn't either. And so that ended up not, and it took me another 5 or 6 years to find the folk music community. And so that's sort of how that all came about.
Yeah. Well, we're talking this morning with Ronnie Cox. He is a musician and actor. He's been in many films and television shows. He's now recorded several CDs. The most recent is Ronnie Cox Songs with Repercussions. He will be in our studios here at WILL in early November to give a show, perform in support of WILL, and we'll talk some more with Ronnie Cox in just a moment. First, we'll take a short break. This is Focus.
WILL programs are made possible by the Center for Advanced Study, whose MillerCom 2012 lecture series presents Human Social Networks in Real and Evolutionary Times by Hikulis Christakis on Monday, October 17th at 8 p.m. at the Alice Campbell Alumni Center on Lincoln Avenue in Urbana.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk show. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. We're here weekday mornings with 10 different topics. Just want to tell you quickly that in the second hour, we will go back to this thing that we've been calling the Deep Archives Project. That just marks the fact that this show, Focus, has been on the air now here at WILL 30 years. And I thought one of the things we might do in a way of celebrating would be to go into our tape archives, and we have programs that go back quite a ways, shows that have not been heard, though, in many cases since they were first broadcast, and programs with some pretty interesting folks. And so what we have for you today is another installment in this, and I have two mystery writers, one that's not quite as old as some of the other shows, but one that really does go back. And these are two guys that are very different, two from two very different generations, but both pretty interesting. So in the second hour, you'll hear edited portions of an interview that I did back in, I believe that was in 1996, with Mickey Spillane, and then a little bit more recent from 2005, a conversation with Walter Mosley. You can find out what we're doing on the show by looking at our website. You can listen to past programs that way. That's WILL.illinois.edu. In this hour of Focus, we are talking with actor-musician Ronnie Cox. He's had roles in over 125 films and television shows. His very first movie, as he explains in the first part of the interview, was Deliverance. In fact, he said it was the first time he'd ever been in front of a camera. He's also performed in Bound for Glory. That was his second movie. That's about the life of Woody Guthrie. Some of his other films include Onion Field, Taps, Beverly Hills Cop, RoboCop, Total Recall. He's also done a lot of acting on television, many different programs. He was a part of the series Saint Elsewhere. He performed on Star Trek, Next Generation, a lot of other shows. And as I said at the beginning of the program, the name might not be familiar to you, but if I showed you his picture, you'd say, oh, yes, that guy. I've seen that guy on the screen. And he's going to be here on November 7th. He's going to play a show in our studios. If you'd like to have a ticket and you can make a $60 contribution to the station, that'd be great. That's what we're doing. Two tickets, $120. There's a dessert provided by Strawberry Fields. It's going to be a nice evening, Monday, November 7th. And if you'd like to get in on this right now, you can call 217-244-9455. And I'll also be talking about it tomorrow on the Midnight Special, hosted by Rich Warren. This is something he's also helping us with. That's tomorrow afternoon at 2 here on WILO. Well, I'd like to have to go back just a little bit to talking about acting. And you, sure. You talked about the fact that Deliverance, that was your first movie, and that you had got it because you got that part because they wanted somebody who could play. And you did this famous scene where you played guitar. What was it that got you interested in acting?
I wanted to be an actor and a musician my whole life. I can remember the film that actually made me. I saw the Treasure of Sierra Madre when I was 10 or 12 years old. A John Huston film, mm-hmm. Humphrey Bogart and Walter Huston, and from that moment on, I knew that I wanted to be an actor and a musician. I used to tell people when I was in high school, I'd say, so one of these days you'll look up on the screen and say, oh, there's a...
And there's Ronnie.
They always laughed at me, but that's all I ever wanted to do.
Huh. Why? What about that was that idea of being up there on that big screen was so appealing?
Well, part of it is I came from really kind of poor background. We were the kids from the wrong side of the tracks, and I was... obviously the sort of the class clown, if you will, and that was I love that sort of attention that I got, and I found that I was good at it. If I have a gift, if I'm being honest, I mean there are better singers and there are probably better songwriters than I am, but I'm really good at just reaching out and knowing how to entertain people. I just know how to do that, and it's something that I almost innately know. I'm not a really well trained actor, although I majored in theater in college, and then I spent like eight or, you know, I had been in a professional actor for 8 or 10 years before I got Deliverance on stage. So, but I learned it more just by doing it rather than actually studying, because it's hard to be a theater major at Eastern New Mexico University.
not all that many opportunities probably to be treading the boards there.
No.
You have become identified with a certain kind of character, certainly characters that are authority figures, and particularly if people think of movies like RoboCop and Total Recall, really nasty kind of bureaucrats.
Yeah.
And but also, I'd say if you were thinking, if you're looking for somebody to say, you're looking for somebody to play the President of the United States, okay, you'd be on my list. You got the right look. You got the right look, and it's interesting because also in looking at the clip from Deliverance, not only did you look younger and was your hair darker, but there's something about it. I almost would not have known that it was you. What about is it about the look? Is it something about reaching a certain level of maturity, or is it something that you somehow know how to project that ends up people see you in those kind of parts?
Well, I'm glad you picked up on that, because early in my career, it's not that they did dye my hair dark for that film, because both John Boyd and I were sort of blondish, and they did that to distinguish us. But for the first 10 or 15 years of my career, and not that I put on a lot of makeup stuff, but when I would play a character, people didn't think that the guy in this film was even related to the guy in this film. And I don't know if it's a manifestation of approaching the character in a different way. I don't know what that is. But it used to be a frustration for me because one role never led to the next one. And it was only when people started seeing the body of my work that they realized that I was so different all the time. And it really was only in many ways, RoboCop and Total Recall were as big a boon to my career as Deliverance was, because in Deliverance I played the sensitive one. So I spent the first 10 or 15 years of my career playing really Mr. Nice Guy, Next Door Neighbor, Boy Scout leader. and it wasn't until RoboCop and Total Recall that then people realized. And in someone once said to me, said, Ronnie, the good thing about you playing the bad guy is it's like an astronaut that's gone bad. and I have to tell you, David, that I love playing the bad guys. They're about 20 times more fun to play than the good guys. I try to be a good person every day of my life. That's boring. I liken it to painting. If you're the good guy, you get three colors: red, white, and blue. If you're the bad guy, you get the whole palette.
I've heard it and read that so many times that the bad guy is always a more interesting part. He's a more complicated character. You have more fun doing it. There are more dimensions, and you should not be surprised that someone really would say, "Oh, I love playing bad guys."
Absolutely. I mean, you ask any actor, almost any actor, and they all like playing the bad guys. They just get to make so much more interesting choices. The good guys' choices are pretty predictable. I mean, we all sort of know sort of where the good guy has to go and needs to go for the film to work. And the bad guy, you just get to make all of these wonderful choices. Mm. And that's the fun of acting. That's the other thing. I consider two kinds of actors. There are actors who sort of play persona. In other words, they just sort of play a sort of a glorified version of who they are. And then there are actors who play all over the place, and I have no desire to play Ronnie. I want to play the characters, and the more differences there are in that character from me, the better I like it.
I would think, though, that there might be a problem in that, given that you've now come to be known for playing that kind of part, that then that's all you're going to get offered.
No, not true.
No, not true.
Now that it came to that, now I get offered everything. I just earlier this year I played a television movie where I played one of the sweetest, and in Captain America, the first movie of Captain America, I played the sweetest, nicest president you've ever seen in your life. So I get to play them all, although. I don't know if you know, ironically, that we're talking about this coming Sunday night. I'm on an episode of Dexter. I don't know if you know the
Oh, well, I know that. Yes, this is the show about the serial killer who helps the police.
Yes, and I am. They tell me that I am now playing the worst serial killer they've ever had.
Ooh. Well, we better all tune in.
It's Sunday night, and none of your I'm not sure any of your listeners are old enough to see it.
Oh, yes. I think probably so. It would be surprising me if there were too many who would need an adult to be present.
Well, my point is that I don't, even if you're 55, 60, I don't think you're old enough to see this.
Okay. Well, there's a challenge. Now people will certainly tune in now that you've said that. One of the other show I just wanted to ask you about, just because it's sort of stands out as in some people's minds as a maybe a good idea that didn't work, or just as something that was just simply was a bad idea. And this was the show Cop Rock. And I don't know how many people remember it. I remember seeing the very first one of these and thinking that it was one of the strangest things I'd ever seen on television. This was a series that was developed by Steve Bochco, who was the Hill Street Blues guy. and it was a musical police drama. And amazingly enough, it actually lasted 11 episodes. But this was a show where it kind of like what you would expect. They were going along, and it was a police drama. It was like you were watching Law and Order. But then suddenly, people would start singing.
Yes.
And it seemed like, if it sounds like an odd concept, it was. Believe me, I remember having seen it. I don't know what you and the other people involved in the show thought about it or what you think about it now.
I'll tell you the truth. I loved doing that show probably more than any other show. I had more fun on that show than any other show. Now, did it work? No. It was 10, 15 years ahead of its time. But look at Glee and all these shows. They're all treading in those footsteps.
Oh, well, yeah. I guess now that you put it like that, well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
That's true.
And so the learning curve on that show was straight up, and we made a lot of mistakes. But first of all, the music was all written in the first episode, and the pilot episode was written by Randy Newman. So we were working with Randy Newman. It was almost Brechtian drama that would every now and then break into song.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it was the only television show and movie that I've ever been involved with where I went to work every day, whether I was called or not. Even if I had the day off, I went to work just to watch. And sometimes it was like watching a train wreck. But it was one of those things that you could not avert your eyes from. And I you remember when I said that I went got back into the music because my son left home?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was also when Cop Rock had just closed, and I realized how much I missed the music.
So you and the other actors, you all did your own singing?
Yes, and we all, and to a man, the actors in that show loved it.
Well, I don't know if there's some way one can go back and see that now.
There are, and I'll tell you this.
Uh-huh.
In England, it's considered America's finest television.
Really?
They have festivals over there where they show all 11 shows in one day. And as a sideline, a little trivia here, we had a guarantee on the air for 13 shows. We did 11, and the network came to us and said, we'll pay you off. Don't do the other two.
Please, stop. We'll pay you. That is a great story. Well, we're coming down to the point where we have maybe about 5-6 minutes left. I want to play another song here from from Songs of Repercussions, and I thought maybe people would enjoy hearing one that you co-wrote, and I was thinking maybe about playing Santa Ana Winds.
Oh, great.
And I don't know, again, there if you want to say a couple of things about the song beforehand.
Well, the Santa Ana Winds are the winds that blow in off the desert. And maybe most people don't know that, but when the Santa Ana, it makes people a little crazy.
Mm.
When Santa Ana winds blow in out there, domestic violence goes up by a discernible percentage. They're sometimes considered the devil winds, but the hidden asset of that is that it blows the smog away.
Okay. Well, again, this is Ronnie Cox from his CD Songs with Repercussions, Santa Ana Winds.
Most people say there's nothing to it, just hot sandy air blowing in. There's a California reason, the only change in season, known as the Santa Ana winds. Most people talk like it was evil. They don't understand what it's all about. Almost too afraid of what it's blowing in, to be thankful for what it's blowing out. Maybe it's the spirits of the conquistadores coming back from long, long ago. Or the Conestoga sailors that foundered in Death Valley. Only Santa Ana knows. Share the mystery of Southern California. To some, they're beginnings, some, the end. But to me, they're as real as this old horse I'm riding, the never-changing Santa Ana winds. They never die. They're in the San Jacinto Mountains, waiting with an ever-watchful eye. If you listen in the evenings on the sand down by the ocean, you can hear their distant cry. Maybe it's the spirits of the conquistadores coming back from long, long ago, or the Conestoga sailors that foundered in Death Valley. Only Santa Ana knows. Only Santa Ana knows. Only Santa Ana knows. I see.
That's Santa Ana Winds, Ronnie Cox, from his most recent CD, Songs with Repercussions. And I want to mention one more time that he's going to be here in Champaign-Urbana in our studio, Studio X. He's going to do a show for us. This is an event to raise money for WILL, being put together by Rich Warren, a host of the Midnight Special, and some folks here at the station. And this will be taking place Monday, November 7th. There is a little dessert associated with that, so you can get a ticket. One ticket for a contribution of $60, two for $120. They'll be talking about this tomorrow afternoon on the Midnight Special. This airs Saturday afternoons at 2 here on WILL AM, so you might want to tune in for that. But if you'd like to get in on this right now, you can call right now and make the contribution, 217-244-9455. For a little more, we'll even kick in a CD. A repercussion CD. And of course, you can go wherever it is you buy music and you could pick up a CD for yourself. It just strikes me, Ronnie, that you're just somebody who is really lucky in that you can actually make a living doing these two things that you really enjoy, because clearly you really enjoy acting. But in acting, that makes it possible for you to do this other thing that you really enjoy, and that's playing music.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I'm almost reticent to say this, but I can never ever recall a time, either as an actor or as a musician, that I've dreaded going to work. I love going to work every day. So I'm blessed in that respect.
Is there, when in a particular, I don't know how quite to ask this question, I don't know, a particular sound you're going for, so, or a particular feeling that you're going for, that you're trying to project?
No, it's almost the opposite. I have such eclectic, I want as many different sounds and as many different directions to go as possible. So I used to, in my band, I had a muted cornet in my group. We were going to have to give up our folk music credentials because we had a muted cornet. I love every genre of music, every sound, every period of music. It's just I want to do it all, and if, that's one of the reasons why a lot of songwriters just do their own material. And I'm one of the few songwriters that I know of that I can do a whole night of just my material, and I think my songs are really good. But that interests me not at all. I like to find, because see, I'm being an actor, I'm really comfortable with the concept of an interpretive artist as well as being a creative artist. And sometimes being able to interpret somebody else's song is just as important to me as doing my own songs. If I can find somebody else's song and make it my own, somehow find a way to make it come out of my impulses, then that's almost more satisfying to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's interesting. Just not very long ago on the program Fresh Air, Terry Gross was interviewing somebody who was a really famous songwriter, producer, singer. And he said something interesting about how once we got into the age of singer-songwriters, well, then everybody wanted to write and do their own material. And he sort of said something like, well, you know, not everybody can really write a great song, and that maybe we've gotten away from the idea that being a song interpreter, singing a good song, whether that's your song or not, is great. There's really nothing wrong with being a singer. Everybody doesn't also have to be a songwriter.
I couldn't agree more with that. And I think it's also our duty as folk musicians, because the way music gets passed on is exposing people to other people's music. And so if I know a wonderful songwriter, young songwriter from North Carolina named Jonathan Bird, and your listeners haven't heard of him, it's my job to say, listen, this is Jonathan Bird's song. You need to know it. Or Jack Williams. If you don't know Jack Williams' music, then you're missing out on stuff. So that's kind of my job as a folk artist, is to expose people to that music.
Yeah. Well, we've come to the end of our time. It's been a great pleasure talking with you. I certainly appreciate you giving us your time, and I know that people here will really enjoy the chance to sit down and listen to you and have you tell stories and sing songs, and we really appreciate the fact that you're going to be doing that for us.
Well, I'm delighted to be coming. I'm so glad that Rich Warren asked me to come and be a part of this. And I'm bringing a wonderful young mandolin player, Karen Mall, who's beautiful and has a voice like a bird. And the two of us are really looking forward to doing the show.
Well, that's great. We are looking forward to seeing you. And if people want to call 217-244-9455, they can get a ticket, one for $60, two for $120. And, of course, if you want to hear his music, you can head out to wherever you get music, and you can pick up a copy of his most recent CD, which is Songs with Repercussions. Ronnie Cox, hey, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, David.
He can really write a great song, and that maybe we've gotten away from the idea that being a song interpreter, singing a good song, whether that's your song or not, is great. There's really nothing wrong with being a singer. Everybody doesn't also have to be a songwriter.
I couldn't agree more with that. And I think it's also our duty as folk musicians, because the way music gets passed on is exposing people to other people's music. And so if I know a wonderful songwriter, young songwriter from North Carolina named Jonathan Bird, and your listeners haven't heard of him, it's my job to say, listen, this is Jonathan Bird's song. You need to know it. Or Jack Williams. If you don't know Jack Williams' music, then you're missing out on stuff. So that's kind of my job as a folk artist, is to expose people to that music.
Yeah. Well, we've come to the end of our time. It's been a great pleasure talking with you. I certainly appreciate you giving us your time, and I know that people here will really enjoy the chance to sit down and listen to you and have you tell stories and sing songs, and we really appreciate the fact that you're going to be doing that for us.
Well, I'm delighted to be coming. I'm so glad that Rich Warren asked me to come and be a part of this. And I'm bringing a wonderful young mandolin player, Karen Mall, who's beautiful and has a voice like a bird. And the two of us are really looking forward to doing the show.
Well, that's great. We are looking forward to seeing you. And if people want to call 217-244-9455, they can get a ticket, one for $60, two for $120. And, of course, if you want to hear his music, you can head out to wherever you get music, and you can pick up a copy of his most recent CD, which is Songs with Repercussions. Ronnie Cox, hey, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, David.
WILL programs are made possible by Bevere Cafe. Bevere Cafe offers specialty coffees, breakfast featuring a choice of cold and hot breakfast items from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., and to-go sandwiches and salads for lunch. Bevere Cafe is student-operated in Bevere Hall, corner of Gregory and Goodwin, Urbana.
We're taking a break here. We usually do, so we can bring an update on the markets when we come back at hour number two. Another installment of the Deep Archives. We have two interviews from the past of Focus. So one, they're both with mystery writers. One that's a little bit more recent than some that we have been doing. That's with Walter Mosley. But we're also going back all the way to 1996 for a conversation I had with Mickey Spillane. That's hour two. First, we'll take a break for an update on the markets.
Good morning, everyone. This is David Dickey with a look at the marketplace, where today at the Chicago Board of Trade, it's been a very choppy and mixed affair, especially in the corn and soybean picks. Day started out in positive territory, has since drifted into negative territory in the corn in particular. The only contract holding in there is the nearby November soybean contract, and in much of what we're seeing there also in negative territory at the moment. Let's go ahead and look at some particulars for you. In Kansas City, December wheat at 703.5 is up 2.5.